Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Can you spy for small business?
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. And there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. 800-531-3815, toll-free coast to coast. And my website is www.jbsba.com. Ron Peterson is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's the president of Three Arrows Capital Corporation, which is an investment banking firm in beautiful downtown Bethesda, Maryland, which is hard by to our nation's capital. He's been working with companies for something under 100 years, but more than 30, and started when he was only two. And Ron's been helping companies to follow their dream with the capital that they need for a long time now. He's the author of a book I'm holding in my hand, When Venture Capitalists Say No. Ron Peterson, welcome back to the show.
Jim, it's such a pleasure to be on with you.
It's good to have you back, as always, and it's a topic that you like to talk about is a topic that I like to talk about, and I think one that most small business owners like to talk about, and that is, you know, the future of our businesses, whether that be getting the cash that we need, or maybe finding the product or the focus of our company, and then building the capital around it. I know you've been working lately. You've been thinking a lot lately about technology, haven't you?
Technology and technology transfer, because as you know, Jim, it's arguably the richest resource that we have in this country. If we take a look at economic history, we can think of Bill Gates, who did a technology transfer, for those people who aren't familiar with it, in the 1980s, and he did it by licensing DOS from the Seattle Filmworks. When he'd for $50,000 and then reapplying it to what IBM needed for their personal computers. Mm-hmm. And by doing so, he became the richest man in the world. Now, this is the heart and soul of technology and transfer. And those folks who aren't familiar with it simply need to know that it's taking something that's been done elsewhere, finding it from an entrepreneurial fashion, a new application for it, applying it to that new market, and showing what can be done with it. If we look at American economic history generally, we can find that some of the biggest, most profitable corporations ever started out as technology transfer.
Absolutely. And primarily, why don't you give us your definition, your short definition of what, I know a lot of people hear about what technology transfers are, but why don't you give us your short definition of that?
Okay, that would be taking something that has been researched and developed elsewhere, licensing it, buying a patent, agreeing to royalties, or otherwise finding a new application for it. The federal government, local universities are very, very active in these pursuits, and what they're trying to do is to find new sources of revenue by taking the things that have been done in their laboratories and noting that we need to have it on our store shelves. NASA has been one of the forefront, in the forefront of the whole technology transfer movement. Early on in the space program, the only thing they could point to was Teflon, which had been developed as a high friction product. But technology transfer has gone a long way since that, Jim.
Well, we've all heard the stories about all the things that we benefited, how we benefited from the space exploration and from the program. You know, the list is long of the different products that we use today that had its origins in the space program. One of the things that where I'm seeing what you're talking about happening right now, Ron, is in incubators, business incubators around the country. There are technology business incubators popping up around the country, typically associated or nearby to, if not sponsored by, certainly associated with and nearby to a university, as you say, where research is being done. And the you got basically three entities working together. You've got the university itself, you've got the managers, the developers, the operators of the incubators, and then you have the entrepreneurs themselves. And these three people come together, and they identify commercial applications of some of the things that are being developed in these universities.
Sure, and Jim, as you know, it can be very lonely being an entrepreneur, and it doesn't have to be because an incubator can provide you the physical space, lab space. It can be, as you say, right there on the campus or nearby university or college, and with it, faculty, even students can be free resources for
you. That's exactly right. And we're going to talk about this some more, folks, and how you can find these opportunities near you. And there are a lot of different ways for you to look at them, and we're going to talk about that with Ron Peterson after these messages. His book is called When Venture Capitalists Say No. 20 Tales, stay with us. We're back. It's 17 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you, coming up in the hour straight ahead, Renee Grant Williams is our voice expert. She's going to help us with that to make sure that our voice serves us well in the way we speak, not just the content, but the way it comes out of our mouth and how we enunciate and all that. She's going to help us with that coming up in the top of the next hour. And then after that, Chuck Cadillac, who's one of our top economic experts, and he's going to give us a little bit of a look at his crystal ball about what he thinks about the economy and how it's doing and how it's going to be doing. Right now we're visiting with another friend of ours, Ron Peterson, the author of When Venture Capitalists Say No. Ron, why don't you tell us where your book's available, please?
Oh, thank you. Well, it is on Amazon, but generally a quicker way to buy it is to go to the website, Three Arrows Capital. That's www.threee, then ARROWS, capital.com, threearrowscapital.com.
All right, check
and
that out.
And it's interesting because at the start, as you know, Jim, what we have is the story of how Henry Ford developed the Ford Motor Company 100 years ago, and he didn't have any assets whatsoever, mm-hmm. No SBA loans, no venture capitalists, no business angel.
He built his quadricycle in his garage and had to break the door, break out part of the door to get it out because it was too big.
Well, that's probably part of the whole story. We don't have that part in. We do have the thought about how imaginative he had to be in order to get that company operating. And
yeah.
We know entrepreneurs today are doing variations of that same thing. But
nope.
We've got an idea that we have to get moving. We've got to get our companies going. And Ford and others are the people that we can learn from.
Well, there's no question about it. And, you know, one of the things that we found about entrepreneurs, Ron, and I know you know this, is that most of us are what we're doing, making money is not the driving force for us.
No, it's not. It's not the thing that drives.
Creating something from nothing, if that's what it takes, but certainly creating something that that no one's ever seen before, or a better way of doing something, that's what drives most of us.
Yeah, well, you've seen it in your experience, where Jim, we're cashed out entrepreneurs who have more money now than they can ever spend. They get a little bored after a while with bass fishing or playing golf. The first thing they want to do, they want to go back and either start a company or maybe become a business angel so that they can have their hand in something mm-hmm. as interesting intellectually and as potent as forming a new company.
And one of the things that those angels will get pretty excited about are these technology transfer opportunities that you mentioned.
Becoming richer and richer as the things that come out of federal labs and university labs have so much potency. If I can give a quick story, a few months ago, north of Baltimore, at the U.S. Army's Aberdeen lab, they had a technology transfer show where the labs there opened up their research to indicate to venture capitalists and other entrepreneurs what might be available for them to license from the Army and bring onto the commercial sector. And one of the engineers I spoke to from the Army lab had developed a bracelet or something, or a necklace that was a monitor for vital functions for a soldier. They could tell the respiration. They could tell if they were still moving, if they were prone, and half a dozen different things.
Wow.
It was all wireless, and it was inexpensive. And we were thinking that, gee, why couldn't we arrange with the Army to see whether or not this would be something useful in monitoring Alzheimer's patients, maybe
people in nursing, patients in nursing homes?
Yeah, or newborns or what have you. And we could find out a couple of things. We might be able to do something as simple as put an ad in the AARP journal or so to see if it would sell, or some other vehicles, and we could test if we have the basis of that as something that would sell out there.
Mm-hmm.
And if we did, we could have a company started for literally just a few $1,000s. But in turn, if it didn't sell, if it didn't market, we would know that with a pretty small experiment. We wouldn't have to put up our house.
Right.
And we take that story and we multiply it, and we have the whole story of technology transfer, and it's becoming a bigger thing, not only in the U.S., but overseas as well.
Well,
let's
see,
the
thing that you just identified, Ron, a lot of times when people think technology transfer, they think, okay, it comes out of a university, it's kind of in a raw form, it doesn't really look like it will need to look in a commercial application, and in order to get to that point, I'm going to need to be a technology expert to make that happen, and so I'm not really good at that, and so therefore, you know, that's not really an opportunity for me. What you just described, all that takes is a marketer.
That's exactly it, the entrepreneur, and that's the people that you really speak to, correct, Jim?
Sometimes these technology transfer folks doesn't mean that it has to be reworked and you know, turned inside out and made into a, you know, a tractor made into a Cadillac. You know, it doesn't have to look do that. Sometimes it comes off out of the off the research table, looking like what it needs to look like in the application, in the commercial application.
And so if a person starts to think that they want their own company, maybe they can start to look at the resources that are available out there at their local universities and other and federal labs and the rest, and start to think whether or not they might have the wherewithal for a company.
Well, you know what? Something else. If you just go find out, if you're anywhere near where something like that's happening, you go find out what they're working on. That'll give you a pretty good opportunity about what people are going to be buying in a year or three or five from now. And some of it might be a threat. It could be either be a threat or an opportunity for what you do right now.
Yeah, to be aware of what's going on in your particular industry or your passion, it has extraordinary value.
Absolutely.
Hold on to that thought.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, one of the things I want to talk to you about, folks, and get Ron to help me with, is even if you aren't interested in technology transfer, guess what? Those people who are make excellent customers. Tintil, stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 7 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Ron Peterson is our guest. He's the president of Three Arrows Capital Corp. 3-Arrows Capital.com is the website. And Ron, I'd like for you to tell the audience, if someone's out there right now interested in finding some capital for their business, and they think that they make a good fit for a venture capitalist, and then I'd like to encourage them to contact you. Certainly check your website, but also in other ways. Would you tell us about how to do that, please?
Yeah, sure. I invite them to go to the www.3arrowscapital.com website and read the story of how Henry Ford began his company, but also if they'd like to get hold of a copy of the book. It's filled with illustrations of about 400, how people put together their companies and attracted capital. But as you and I were talking about earlier, technology transfers, in theory, one of the best ways to get people excited about investing. Locally in Gaithersburg, Maryland, there's a company called Clarigen who licensed the technology out of the National Institutes of Health. And when they did that, it attracted another $4 million from venture capitalists because they had this technology already done, pretty much ready to apply into a marketplace. So an investor didn't have to take a big risk associated with, we have to spend 5 years in the lab to see if it works before it goes to the lab. So there's stuff sitting there right at your local university, right at some of your federal labs, and even companies. For instance, an example, Procter & Gamble produces lots of new products each year, and they may go way downstream with them and do their market tests. But let's just say as an example, Jim, that a new product is disappointing to Procter & Gamble, that they can see a market of $20, $40, or $50 million, but that's just not enough for Procter & Gamble to be interested. They need a $1 billion product to add it to their portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, they'll seek to license it.
Right.
They'll put it on a website, and they'll want to see what they can get out of it. But while $20 million isn't enough for Procter & Gamble, it's right attractive for a lot of the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
And these stories multiply, and it's a basis for more entrepreneurs all the time. But the first thing to do is to plug in a little bit to what your local organizations are. Find out what they may have available. What can be done out there.
I'd also like to encourage you folks to read books like the one that Ron has written, When Venture Capitalists Say No. And the reason is because if you approach a venture capitalist and you don't know anything about them, you don't know how they work, you don't know how they operate, you don't know some of the protocols, if you don't know any of that, you could have the greatest idea since sliced bread and not get anywhere, because there is a certain code almost. It's a way of doing business, and if you're going to break through the clutter of all the opportunities that they have available to them, you've got to kind of know how to behave and how to prepare your information. And that's the reason why I really encourage you to read and educate yourself as much as possible. And that's one of the reasons why I like to have Ron back on the show. Besides the fact that he's a really cool guy, his book is excellent.
Well, thanks, but that's a wonderful point, because if you're a venture capitalist today, you may get 6,000-10,000 business plans a year. You can't possibly read those
nope.
things, and if a person makes a mistake at the outset and doesn't relate to you, you don't get a second chance.
That's right.
They're too busy.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right, and they know that they're going to toss a couple of dozen in any given year that could be big money makers, don't they? They just can't, but they literally don't have the time.
There's no way they can handle these things. And there, in many ways, there are almost too many good ideas out there. So a venture capitalist doesn't want a good idea as much as they want a viable business. What can they do to return something to their own investors?
Absolutely.
That's the code that they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
How can we generate some revenue?
One of the things I'd like to do in the last minute that we've got left, Ron, is just to remind people that even if you're not interested in technology transfer, the people who are, think about the first person who walked up and knocked on Bill Gates' door 20 years ago and said, hey, Bill, I think you're onto something. I sell water or toilet paper or whatever it might be. What can I do to help? I mean, you think that guy's not still doing business with Bill Gates? I bet he is.
Yeah, that's right. So from a customer basis, this is a wonderful way to align yourself, correct?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I mean, check these folks out. Even if you're not a technology transfer candidate, the people who are going to be good customers, so don't forget that. Ron Peterson, thank you for being here. Good job today. We enjoyed our visit.
It's always a pleasure.
We'll get you back again another time. Ron Peterson always has good information for us, folks. When Venture Capitalists Say No, and Peterson, P-E-T-E-R-S-O-N, if you type in that into the online search engines. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. This is Jim Blasingame, Small Business Advocate. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.